Okay, I guess the recording has started.
Yeah, I've set it for 5 minutes before. So you are on stage. We are all on stage, okay? So hello. let me, for the benefit of those that might be watching us from online, let me simply say that normally we should have streaming starting from the morning lecture, but unfortunately the service was not available in the new room that has been assigned to us. Hopefully this will be fixed by next week. We can only hope. But at least half of the sessions will be streamlined, unless of course we sustain another room change by then, in which case nobody knows. Okay. But no, I think we should be safe. Okay, so I guess it will be a bit difficult. Now, this thing doesn't follow me.
I can tilt it.
Yeah, but I will be moving anyway. So unless you intend to stand up and tilt it so that you can follow me. I don't think this would be a good idea. But that's not the biggest issue, I think. What might will probably be an issue, and we'll see how we can find a way out of it, is that your interaction is not captured. Okay. So that kind of discussion that we had in the morning, I'm not sure that we can continue doing. I will do it, but those online will be missing probably parts of it. I will try to repeat, but obviously in a discussion it's not easy to repeat. Maybe a way out, I don't know how sensitive this thing is if you can shout. Okay. Maybe, we'll see. We'll get feedback, I hope, from colleagues watching us online. Okay, so yeah, I have to stick back there then, so that I can be on camera. Oh, I hate that, really. Anyway, okay, so last part for today's session is about national cybersecurity strategies. Since we have hopefully agreed that this is, I mean, critical infrastructure and critical information infrastructure protection is something worth looking at least at the national level, then, okay, how do we do that? And that's how we're going to discuss in the coming 2 hours. So let me start by... Have you ever... you're using this term, right? Cyberspace. Okay, have you ever wondered what it means? No? You haven't been using it? Come on, no. I don't believe that. I don't believe that anyone in your age has not been using the term cyberspace. No? You've heard it. I'm sure you've come across it. Have you ever asked yourselves what it means? Okay. There is silence, so there is nothing to repeat. So I'll give one answer. Well, it's not so bad. You shouldn't feel so bad about it, because there is no clear definition about that. Okay, but there is some consensus saying that cyberspace is the physical, logical, and organizational, meaning social, interconnections that arise from interconnecting information systems and physical systems. So the key issue here is the interconnection between physical and information systems, including humans, of course. Now, interestingly enough, the term is attributed to a science fiction writer, and quite far back, 1982. Now, if you read his justification of how, well, his explanation or his story about how he came up with the term, it's fitting, I think, because essentially what it says is that, well, it doesn't mean anything, but it liked the idea. I mean, as a term, it is kind of attractive. And, well, he proved to be right, because it has stuck since then. Okay. 35 years now. Okay. But no real semantic meaning. So, okay, we're talking about this. Interconnection, information systems, physical systems, this is cyberspace. Okay. Now, what is cybersecurity then? Well, one would easily say that cybersecurity is the security of cyberspace. Right? Yeah, Well, that's the easy answer. Now, if you want clear answers on this, there are several. Now, if you go to the European Union level, cybersecurity is the safeguards and actions that can be used to protect cyberspace, obviously enough. There is a note here that this applies both to the civilian and the military fields. This is not necessarily so everywhere. And protected from what? Those threats that are associated or may harm networks and information infrastructure. And obviously what we're trying to preserve is availability and integrity and confidentiality of information, otherwise known to you as the CIA triad, right? Which, by the way, is rather old as a concept. We still work with it in information security, in IT security, in cyber security, but it cannot really capture anymore the whole field of security. Anyway, the CIA triad is a good way of organizing things and creating ontologies of knowledge about information security. The source here is worth noting. This is the Center of Excellence on Cybersecurity, which is sponsored by NATO. It's located in Tallinn, in Estonia. Have you ever heard about that? And it's a good source? No, the answer was no. It's a good source of information. Among other things, what they do have a cyber range. Is this a familiar term? Cyber range? No, again? Okay, so cyber range is this. A range is a place where you do exercises, right? Okay, so a cyber range is an environment where you can do exercises of attack and defense against networks and systems. So it is a controlled environment. It's a platform. Have you come across those capture the flag competitions? You've participated in those, okay? Well, this is not a cyber range because it's a one-way kind of interaction. And there are the flags there, and you are supposed to solve challenges, okay? Now, imagine that you split up in two teams, right? A red team, bad guys, and the blue team, which is the good guys, and then you have a range where you can exercise. So the red team would try to attack systems, and the blue team would try to defend, okay? Now, obviously, you can't do that in the real world, and it's not a good idea, because things will escape far from your controlled environment. Now, this is what a cyber range is. Is it now clear? Okay. And this is not easy to set up. We are trying to set up one in Gjevik here, and I think this will be successful, because it can be very useful for training and education as well. But right now, they have one in Tallinn, which is quite good. And as I said, their website is a good source of information. Now, Norway is quite laconic when it comes to defining cybersecurity. It's the protection of data and systems connected to the internet. That's it. But of course, this does not take into account the aspect of physical and non-physical or logical interconnection that we saw in the definition of the cyberspace. Okay. And then if you look at the United States, they have several definitions. So they look at cybersecurity in many different ways. If you want the NTNU vision and view on this, well, it's actually the NORCIS view. You know NORCIS, CCIS partner. So if you look at the CCIS website, you will find an article by NORCIS, I think it is by Peggy, explaining the differences between cyber and information security, which was, I found, quite good, and this is why I'm giving it to you. So, of course, information security is about protecting information, and we don't care whether it's stored digitally or not. So don't confuse information security with computers, not necessarily. We may talk about information security on a manually preserved system. Then ICT security is about the protection of information and communication technologies. That's hardware and software. No mention of information here, right? Now, if you go to IT security, it's practically the same. So these are different terms, but under different names. Data security, of course, is about securing data. And cybersecurity is about securing things that are vulnerable through ICT. And things can be physical things or they can be logical things. And this brings about the interconnection of information systems with the physical world. So cybersecurity comes into play. Cyberspace comes into play, and therefore cybersecurity. By the way, is securing data enough to secure information? Are these terms equivalent? No? No. Why not? There's a difference between data and information, and what's the difference? Okay, so data just it can be a number. It has no meaning attached to it, but information is data put in a specific context, or I could say information is data with the interpretation of what they mean, right? Okay. So what do we protect in information systems? Do we protect data or do we protect information, actually? And we tend to use these two terms rather interchangeably. So in a computer system, do we protect information or do we protect data? Do we? Both? We try to, but... Yes? No. Well, the example was if you're protecting a Word file, right? Then this is information that you're protecting, right? Well, it depends on at what level you're protecting this, because after all, it is information, but isn't it a string of bits and bytes when you take it down to the machine level? So if you encrypt, for example, your file, right? What are you protecting? Is it the information or the data that you're protecting? Okay. If you want to see that graphically, there is a nice paper by two South Africans. One is a good friend of mine, Russell von Solms. This is how they present the whole story there. So if you have information-based assets that are stored and transmitted not using ICT, then you're talking about information security. If you're interested in information-based assets stored or transmitted using ICT, then you're talking about ICT security. And if you're interested in non-information-based assets that are vulnerable to threats via ICT, then this is cybersecurity. Has it been made clearer or fuzzier than before you heard all that? Well, I hope it can be clear, but you know there is a whole debate about information security and cybersecurity and what is which and whether one is a subset of the other or not. I would suggest that if you agree with this kind of depiction, then you keep that as your mental model and then you can refer back to that to see the difference between cybersecurity and information security. Actually, there is an intersection, so there is no subset one of the other. Similarities are that they both try to attain and maintain CIA, but there are some differences if you look at it particularly from the national security perspective. Information security started when most information systems, not necessarily digital, but information systems, were standalone and they were nationally based ones. Cybersecurity, on the other hand, is quite a global concern. This is obvious. I don't think one needs to elaborate on that. I mean, anyone can launch an attack against a system regardless of the relative location of the attacker and the target. Among other things, this creates what we call legal uncertainty. An example of that. Suppose that you have someone in Russia attacking some system in the United States. What kind of legal jurisdiction is applicable? Obviously, this would be unlawful in the United States where the target system is. But is it necessarily unlawful in Russia or in China or in any other place? Not necessarily. And this, of course, creates some uncertainty. So this is another point of view, let's say, from the policy or strategy point of view, that gives us a difference between cybersecurity and information security as it was. By the way, this discussion is following the ITU National Cybersecurity Strategy Guide. Are you familiar with ITU? You know what ITU is? Okay, it was a no. ITU is the International Telecommunications Union, and this is that arm of the United Nations that has responsibility over telecommunications. So what they do, they do global studies about telecommunications. They issue standards, technical standards as well as guidelines to nations that are members of the United Nations. So this is the ITU. And back in 2011, they came up with this report on the National Cybersecurity Strategies Guide, which is a guide guiding nations on how to develop and evaluate their national cybersecurity strategies. So in the motivation, this is the motivation according to the ITU of the differences between cybersecurity and information security. Another difficulty is that cybersecurity has to consider the fact that internet does not always make it possible to attribute an attack to an actor. You know that you can't really go back to the initial location, be it physical or logical, of an attacker in the internet, simply because when you hit the first proxy anonymizer in the traceback that you would try to do, that's it. If they don't cooperate, then you can't go beyond this point. And, well, there is also a difference in focus. Information security, as it was conceived, at least in the beginning, mainly focused on confidentiality. This is not the case with cybersecurity, where we focus more on integrity and on availability. And in fact, if we talk about critical infrastructures, availability is the top priority that we need to consider, and then comes integrity and confidentiality. Of course, this is just a general rule. You cannot generalize it in full, because, for example, if you look at the healthcare services as a critical infrastructure, then you can't forget about confidentiality. The confidentiality of medical information is of equal, at least, importance to the availability of the services and to the integrity of the medical information. You can get people killed based on wrong medical or health information. So ITU concludes that cybersecurity is information security with jurisdictional uncertainty and some attribution issues. This is another point of view. So this is not the technology, let's say, point of view. It's the policy and national policy and international relation point of view. Okay, again, trying to delineate what we're interested in. This is another way of showing it. You have a virtual dimension in cyberspace. This is the logical, let's say, dimension. And then you have the physical dimension, which is facilities, equipment, and all that. Then you have non-critical infrastructures, and you have critical infrastructures. And in the morning, we discussed how we can distinguish between what is critical and what is non-critical. Of course, every nation does it differently, but eventually they do it. So if you look at these are sectors of critical infrastructures, right? So Italy would only have two of those, right? Energy and transporting. So what we cybersecurity looks at is this across critical infrastructure sectors, and across this, so the virtual layer of cyberspace. Whereas if we look at cyber critical information infrastructure protection, we are looking at the critical information infrastructures only among the critical infrastructures, and of course across sectors. So that's what we are interested in over here. Clear enough? Okay. Nods. Now, unfortunately, this is not only a national challenge. I mean, it's a global challenge. And why is this? Well, every nation, of course, have their own strategies for protecting their land, air, sea, and possibly space. Spaces, not, you will not find strategies for protecting space in all countries, but at least there is at least one that considers that space is one of the national spaces worth protecting of, or in need of protecting. Anyway, but if you compare cyberspace to any of those, then there are some differences. First difference is that networks have a global reach, and therefore we can have threat actors attacking systems away and with jurisdictions that do not have any laws at all, or they have weak laws. Second is, in any other case of attack other than cyber attack, there is some considerable time between the time that the attack is launched and you know that it is launched, and the time that the attack is actually being executed. So, for example, if you need to attack from land or even from the air, you do have several minutes to respond. Now, with a cyber attack, this is not the case, because a cyber attack is launched now and it is executed now, if the attacker so wishes. And what is even worse is that you may never know that you are under cyber attack. Whereas, on the other hand, it's quite difficult not to know that you are under air attack, or land attack, or sea attack. I wouldn't know about a space attack. The final note here is that because, of course, conflicts have been known to exist among nations for many years, there are some international rules that govern the rules of conflict or conflict resolution, even in cases of war. This is not the case with cyberspace and cyber attacks. There is no real international collaboration and rule setting in the case of cyber attacks, and this creates an extra difficulty. And all that leads to the necessity to develop national cybersecurity strategies. So, of course, this is by definition what critical information infrastructures do. They are essential for the security and the economic well-being of a country. And as this at the national level is a shared responsibility, shared between the government, shared between the public sector, the private sector, companies, everyone, there is a need for coordinated action. And this cannot be done effectively and efficiently unless it goes under the framework, which usually is called National Cybersecurity Strategy. Now, why is this so? Well, where do we need a strategy for cyberspace? Well, first of all, such a strategy would treat cyberspace as a strategic domain, similar to the other domains. And strategies are meant to help mitigate the impact of cyber attacks. Anyway, well, they are meant to help mitigate the impact of any kind of attack, in this case, cyber attack. So one reason is because having a strategy will minimize the impact of an attack in case such an attack is launched. Then, having a strategy like that forms the basis for a national program for cybersecurity. So, okay, we have agreed at the national level that this is important. We need to minimize the impact of cyber attack if we have one. How do we do it? Now, this is the national cybersecurity program, and this is actually where the difficulty comes in. So, supposedly, strategy would improve security because it would increase awareness, and it would lead the stakeholders to take preventive measures and also effective responses. And finally, a strategy always builds capacity, and it should always contain clauses that lead to how to enforce, how to enhance capacity. So training, awareness, research, development, and so on are always elements of a good national strategy. So if you want to look at the national cybersecurity strategy issue from, an organized hierarchical perspective, we start from protection principles. And there we have national security strategies. What they do is they identify those overarching protection areas. What is it that we want to protect? And also the principles that will govern the protection of these. An example is of such a principle is, which is actually a heated debate in many countries now. Do we give priority to the protection of civil rights and human rights like privacy, or do we give priority to the cybersecurity of the country if we were to decide between the two? That's one basic principle that every strategy needs to answer to. That's a basic question. Obviously, it is very uncommon to have an explicit answer to questions like this, but you can most of the times derive the positioning of any strategy by the content of the strategy. Another example could be, do we look at all hazards approach? This is an approach that would look at critical infrastructures not only from the cyber perspective but also the physical perspective, or do we look exclusively on the cyber, on the logical cyber perspective, forgetting about the physical perspective? Then these lead into strategies. Protection principles lead to protection policies, and this is where CIP strategies come in. So this would identify the critical infrastructures to be protected, the sectors to be protected. And then one moves down to the protection goals. So you have sector-specific plans that would give you a guidelines and a roadmap of how to protect particular sectors of the identified critical infrastructure. So this is a hierarchy of strategies, starting from the national one and going down to sector-specific ones. And from a structural point of view, what are the action areas that one can identify in the national cybersecurity strategy? Well, there are six. This comes from a document by ENISA. Are you familiar with ENISA? Anyone? Yes and no? Okay, ENISA is the European Network and Information Security Agency. This is a European Union agency which has been mandated with the task of assisting the EU in terms of securing its networks and information. So it comes up with recommendations both to member states at the national level and also with technical recommendations to all stakeholders, which can be private organizations and so on and so forth, for good practices. One of those was on the national cybersecurity strategies, but there are many more, and it's a useful resource. I do recommend it because you can find, for example, guidelines on how to protect the Internet of Things.
Cars.
Yes, there is a very, you've gone through that, haven't you? Yes. There is a very nice report about the security of connected vehicles, isn't that? Yes, the security of connected vehicles, which also, of course, includes technology aspects. So, yeah, it's a good source of information. Anyway, so According to Anisa, then, there are six action areas. We'll go through them quickly. So the first one is policy, which is the development of strategic papers, documents, that would outline our strategic priorities, focal points, goals, measures, and roles and responsibilities of all stakeholders involved with critical information infrastructure protection. Then you have to define a governance structure. Who is responsible for all that? Who is governing the whole thing? It's the implementation of the roles, actually, and the responsibilities that have been defined in the policy area. And this is not only the definition of who is responsible for doing what, but it's also about implementing or developing the public agencies that are responsible for critical information infrastructure protection or for extending the responsibilities of existing authorities. Then you have legal obligations. You cannot enforce any national strategy, be that cybersecurity or anything else, without having the legal instruments in place. I mean, there must be in place a law saying that cybercrime is a crime before you can prosecute cybercrime. So you need a mesh of legal measures that would put the framework in place. Then emergency preparedness, several measures that can make sure that when you have an incident, this will be handled appropriately. Of course, if this is of a national scale. How do you do that? Well, one way is to have exercises for that kind, for critical information infrastructure protection. I mentioned to you the cyber range before. This is where we do exercises. Nations do exercises in that. There are several national exercises going on every year. NATO countries organize their exercises. Nationally, NATO organize their own exercise among different NATO member countries every year. There is also a European exercise like that. And of course, the goal of these is to train people that are mandated with the task of responding to incidents to be ready. It doesn't really make any sense having people responsible for responding to incidents and expecting them to respond to a real incident unless they have gone through extensive training on how to do that in the real world rather than just from documents in theory. And of course, one of the, or maybe the major pillar there is the computer emergency response teams, CERTs. Every country, of course, has one CERT, at least there are more than that. In the case of Norway, it's NorCERT that is the national CERT under the responsibility of NSM, I think. But of course, there are sectoral CERTs as well, like the Kraft CERT in Norway, which is a CERT dedicated to dealing with cybersecurity in the energy sector. Then threat intelligence and information sharing between national authorities and also on the international level. This may seem trivial, but it's really quite difficult to achieve. And this is because people are not always very eager to share information about security incidents, particularly large organizations with financial interests, either direct or indirect. They're not very willing to share information. Have you read any, well, you know about security incidents in many kinds of businesses, right? Every year. There are in the press every day, right? Affecting every kind of business. Have you come across any major incident in a bank ever in the press? Why is that? Well, there are smiles. Why is that, do you think? I mean, is it that our banks are so secure that nothing ever happens in a bank? Well, that would be nice to know, but I don't think this is the case. So what is the case? They need the answer is they need the trust of the customers, And because they do need the trust of the customers, they will simply not reveal the fact that they are having incidents. So, in fact, they would prefer to undertake the cost of the incident, because of course the incident would result in some loss, financial loss, rather than go in the open and try to and announce the fact that there had been an incident. In fact, most banks are insured against cyber incidents, in which case they don't even sustain the financial loss, at least not indirectly. I suspect that bank customers are the ones that finally bear the cost of cyber incidents through the service charges that we sustain as bank customers, part of which goes into insurance. Okay. So this is a good example of why organizations are not always willing to share information. Once they do find out that it's a good idea, but it's difficult. Start is difficult. Okay, so what would a cybersecurity program, what should a good cybersecurity program contain? Well, it should define accountability at the top government level. It should appoint a national cybersecurity coordinator. It doesn't need to be a person. It can be a collective body. A national cybersecurity focal point. It should have legal measures. It should identify legal measures pertinent to cybersecurity. It should define the framework. It should make reference to the computer incident response team, or the CERT. This is a different way of naming a CERT. It should discuss how cybersecurity awareness and education is achieved. It would set up the foundations for a partnership between the public and the private sector on cybersecurity and how this is done. It would have cybersecurity skills and training program. So actually, what you are going through now, I mean your master's studies, right, is part of this kind of thing, even though you may not know it. But the National Cybersecurity Strategy of Norway, as we will see, does define needs for cybersecurity training. And so this doesn't come from our own, I mean the staff in NTNU or before that in HIG, eagerness to provide, to offer education in cybersecurity, but it also comes from national priorities. Okay. And this is not only local to Norway, of course, it is across nations. It should also give links to international cooperation and how this is done. Now, and who is involved in such a strategy? Well, it involves everyone. First of all, the executive branch of the government, that's the government. In American standards, of course, this is why the word executive is before that. So, the government. The legislative branch, so the parliament, is a stakeholder here. National strategies normally go through the parliamentary process of legislation. Critical infrastructure owners and operators, who would they be? Well, if you take every sector, let's say the telecommunications sector, who is the owner and operator of the critical infrastructure in Norway? Telenor is not, well, Telenor is not the owner now, right? Because there is a regulation environment there. It is the operator of the infrastructure, of course. It used to be the owner in the times when telecom infrastructures were, of course, monopolies. But there is a change in that attitude throughout Europe, that actually the owner is the state, and only the incumbent is the operator, but it doesn't own the infrastructure, because, to put it simplistically, this has been built with taxpayers' money. So it's not fair to say that this is the owner. The judiciary. So, when it comes to cybercrime, eventually, if you can get a case to a court, to a court of law, a cybercrime case. Of course, the judges will be those that will come, will be called upon to decide whether this has been a crime or not. And there is a lack of expertise in the judiciary about dealing with cybercrime in several nations. In fact, even the area of cyber criminology is not well defined. If you look into research publications about cybercrime, there is no clear understanding of what cybercrime really is, and far less there is a taxonomy. It doesn't exist of what cybercrime is. There are several in criminology theories. There are several taxonomies of what crime is in the physical world, but those don't necessarily map into the cyber world, and this creates difficulty when it comes to the judiciary system. Then law enforcement, not the police. The intelligence community, vendors, academia. Does academia contribute or is a stakeholder to the national cybersecurity strategy? Is that readily forthcoming? Would you expect academia to be there? Well, let me put it in another way. If we were not discussing national cybersecurity strategies, but we were discussing, let's say, national security strategies, would you expect academia to be there? What's the role of academia in the national cybersecurity effort? Research is one, yes, of course. Training is, education is. Remember, one of the dimensions of any strategy is education. And in some strategies, including Norway's, research is explicitly mentioned. So who will do that? Obviously, academia is a stakeholder in all this. And then international partners, and last but by no means least, the citizens themselves, because after all, cybersecurity, if you don't have the population engaged with cybersecurity, then you can't really do much. Okay, this is how a nation would go about defining, elaborating a national strategy, and this is what most nations have done. Just going through that, of course, it starts with a driver, and the driver can be a legal obligation. For European member states, they are all obliged under European law to have a national cybersecurity strategy. Therefore, this is a very good driver to do it. And in fact, as we discussed already in the morning, the case of Italy is a good example of a strategy that whose driver has been the legal obligation to come up with it. But of course, this is not the only case. There are other drivers. A nation may be forced to do that because the hard way they came across cybersecurity attacks. And therefore, they realize they have to come up with a strategy. Then somebody has to start directing and coordinating the elaboration. Someone will have responsibility for that. The strategy will be defined and issued. Then, following the hierarchy that we discussed previously, sector-specific strategies will have to be built. Implementation comes then. And finally, there is the final stage of compliance and efficacy. Actually, this is one manifestation of what every process that is supposed to be self-optimized follows. It's the plan, do, check, act model. Are you familiar with the PDCA model of process? We'll come across that later on, but this is actually what it manifests itself here. Okay. And according to the ITU, this is what a national cybersecurity strategy should more or less address. It should start by defining the strategic context into which the strategy falls, then to define the ends, what are the objectives, define the ways, how do we approach the ends, the means, and all that, if you do that correctly, would end up with a national cybersecurity strategy that would have all these nice, desirable characteristics. So, okay, I guess we will start discussing each one of those aspects of a national cybersecurity strategy right after the break, but this is a good point to break. Good. Hello again. This was to the remote ones. So, as promised, we'll start looking into the elements of the model, starting from the context. The context usually is global treaties and conventions, and then, I mean, naming and listing of the treaties and conventions that the strategy is supposed to be conformant to, and then guiding principles. And according to ITU, these are good examples of guiding principles for a national cybersecurity strategy. So one principle is that national values should be protected. The example that we discussed previously about the balance between privacy and the need for giving up a little bit of privacy for cybersecurity is one example of a national value, and each nation is expected, of course, to give different responses to that. Then systematic national leadership. Shared responsibility is a principle that you would find in almost every strategy. An approach that is a multi-stakeholder one, and finally that all this is rooted into risk management. Then if you look into the threats and risks, always remember that cybersecurity or information security or whatever kind of security is not an end. It is only a means to an end, right? And what is the goal? Well, in the particular case of cybersecurity, of course, is to build the confidence and trust that our critical infrastructures will work reliably and they will continue to support national interests even when they are under attack or even when they have been compromised. So, coming back to our discussion in the morning about protection and resilience, and of course of the limited resources that are available in any country to protect critical infrastructures, it's important to focus on the threats that are most likely to disrupt important national activities. And this implies that you would have to do some kind of risk assessment exercise and find out which threats are the most important ones. So how does ITU propose to do this? Well, this is one way of doing it. Of course, this is just a depiction of how it can be done. You have basic interests at stake here, and these are can be defense of the homeland, economic well-being, favorable world order, or promotion of values. This, of course, would depend on each nation. They would be expected to be different among nations. And then you have the intensity of interest here, which ranges from peripheral, so we're not really very interested in this, or major, or vital, or survival case. And you can start filling in then the cells there with elements that you would like to consider for protection. Obviously, those that are higher up in the hierarchy here of interest are the ones that we should be looking at first. This doesn't answer the question, okay, how do we do that? Right? This is the outcome of an exercise. Okay? But that, how to do that, we will discuss in the third session, where we will look into risk assessments and aggregating risk and risk management methodologies for critical infrastructures. In fact, there are many ways of doing it, and one of the difficulties is exactly that multitude of methods for doing it, coupled with the fact that if you use one risk assessment methodology and then your neighbor uses another one, you will most probably come up with different results. What is even worse is that if you yourself use the different methodologies, you will come up with different results, which is even more alarming, because this is, of course, due to the subjective nature of any risk assessment exercise. But, okay, let's not preempt. Now, so this is setting the scene, What is driving us? What are we trying to do? Then the second aspect here is the national cybersecurity objectives. And these can be national security, can be economic well-being, it could be the promotion of values, or the favorable world order, or governance. In practice, these four are the ones that appeared in the table that we showed before when we depict the analysis, the risk assessment results, plus governance. So this is what we're trying to do, protect these things. The objectives are those. The next question then is, okay, how do we do that? How do we approach the strategy? Well, here ITU proposes to use a set of priorities. So priority one, and this is not in terms of significance, it is rather in terms of order of appearance. So one starts with legal measures. And the proposal is that we start with legal measures strategy, which would delineate the legal authority of the government, the process with the parliament, the law enforcement governance framework, and the need for global fight against cybercrime. Then if you go into priority two is technical and procedural measures that should be taken. And other procedural measures, we will look into that into some more detail immediately afterwards in the next slide. We look at cybersecurity goals, and then it's the national cybersecurity framework, and then technical measures, which are classified into the network protection strategy principles and global cooperation on technical measures and how do we achieve that. So if we look first at the procedural measures, the cybersecurity goals and the national cybersecurity framework are developed according to these five stages, again, which are not unexpected, I would say. The relevant driver is identified first. Then a working group is set up to define the framework. The plan and the integration plan is defined by the working group. Then this is communicated among all the relevant stakeholders. And after it has been communicated, it is implemented. And it goes with periodic compliance reporting. If you look at the technical measures, starting from the network protection strategy principles, again, this is a good, remember that this is a guidelines for a good cybersecurity strategy, right? So it's not necessary that one would follow those principles altogether, but it's what is considered to be best practice. So the first one is about the need for uniform access management. What does that mean? Well, there has to be a national agreement on how we provide access to certain or to several categories of information or data. What that means is that there should be some kind of classification of the importance of information and data in critical infrastructures in layers, and then a uniform handling of the access rights that are given to people according to these levels. There is a relevant ITU standard. I think it's ITU X1205, which defines levels of access rights. This is only one, of course, and every country has come up with their own classification and access rights standards. But the principle, the underlying principle says you should have a way of uniformly in the nation defining access rights according to the criticality level of the information. And why is that? Can you give one reason why this is so? Why do we need that? I mean, why do we really need to define this at the national level? Couldn't the telecom operator have their own way of assigning access rights to information, and then the power producers have another one, and then government to have another one, and so on and so forth? Well, forget about governments. Let's talk about the other two. What would the problem be if we didn't have that? Well, come again? you would risk that they would have poor implementations of security? Not necessarily, because if you confine, what's the usual way of assigning access rights within an organization? Of course, you determine the criticality of the information within the organization, right? And then according to that, you assign access rights, right? Okay. And if everyone does this in their own organization, would we be secure? Individually in its organization, the answer is yes, of course, because every organization has the knowledge and the expertise and the know-how to best find those access rights that need to be assigned to their employees within the organization. Okay? So what is the problem? Exactly. Sorry, that they share the information. Remember, critical infrastructures are interconnected, right? So they share information. And that means that if organization A has deployed access rights according to their own rules, and these rules are not compliant, are not compatible with the rules of organization B, what will happen if you get those two together? Well, you might run into security problems. Okay, so that's where the need for uniform access management comes. And this is not easy to implement, not at the policy level, not at the technical level either. One of the most difficult things, I believe still, it has been a problem for many years, but I think still is at the technical level. Can you consolidate the security policies at the machine level of two different domains and come up with a consolidated solution that would cover all the requirements of both domains? An example, you're using web services, right? As citizens, we move away from critical infrastructures now, right? And you do know, of course, that there exist what we call composite web services, right? So a service uses another service and so on and so forth. And you may have a chain of services. Suppose now that you want to define your privacy settings when you visit one of these, when you use one of these composite services. What would happen and how is this done? When the first service that you request is compatible with your privacy settings, so no problem, but one or two or more of the services that this service relies upon have different policies. Is there a consolidation mechanism that could automatically negotiate on your behalf on what the final outcome would be, or would you simply receive back a message, this cannot be done? Or, even worse, your privacy requirements would not be met without you knowing that they have not been met. These are still open questions. There are answers in many cases, but not in all of the cases. So, secure communications is the second principle, and that means communications, including data communications, but other forms of communications as well. Variable depth security, or what we call zoning, so depending on the criticality of parts of the network, the security should be different. Defense in depth is a concept that says that we should not rely on one level of defense in any case, simply because one level of defense may fail. Therefore, there should be something more than that to defend against possible attack that would go through. Well, you haven't started the intrusion detection course yet, but do you have a feeling of how many, what percentage of the attacks today go through the first firewall at the global scale? Just give me an estimate. What do you think? Which means practically how effective is firewall technology in blocking attacks? What would you say? It's close to that. I don't have the latest figures. Latest time I checked it was a couple of years ago, but it was, I think, something like maybe 50 or 60, but it's quite low, okay. And then I'll probably try to find that and give the figure to you, because it was an interesting figure actually. that showed how much goes through the firewall, and then how much goes through the intrusion detection, and then how much goes through everything. And there was an amazing percentage at the end that was not caught by any one of the several layers of defense that we would have. Okay. Then comes the what we called resilience in the morning. So network survivability, even when we are under attack. I don't want to do that as a leading question, so I will ask it as an open question, but this may probably not be enough for you to answer it. What is the, let's say, one of the modern ways of ensuring survivability even under attack? In the morning, we discussed redundancy, right? Physical redundancy. We can have another network, so we can switch. Any other smarter way of doing that in today's times? Any ideas? Without the need for a physical redundancy? Yeah, I know it's unfair. Because I know the answer and you don't. But have you come across the term software-defined networking? You have. Can you share it? I will repeat. I'll yeah, shorten it. The opening statement was that it is quite complicated, which it is. Well, it's not. If you go into the details, you will see that it is not. But it is an open research question. How do we do that? And then the answer was that this is a concept. I will rephrase practically. What you said is very much correct, but I will just rephrase it. You can redefine the configuration of a network, including its logical topology, let's put it this way, not by physically moving elements of the network, but by logically restructuring it. Does that make sense at all? It means I don't have, I will try to simplify it even more. I don't have to change the router or the routing tables or the routing configuration of a network by physically changing the hardware that is responsible for doing that. I can do that by redefining the structure of the network through software. Is it better now? Well, why is this useful in our case? Well, if I can do that, suppose now that part of my network is compromised. If I didn't have that option, what would I need to do? Physically replace parts of that compromised part of the network, or physically cut it off from the rest, so at least not to allow the threat to move around, right? But if I have the option of defining by software the configuration of the network, then isn't it much more simple to do the same thing? So this is why we talk about software-defined networking. That's SDN. You will come across the term by its acronym. It's SDN. You can use SDN for security, but then SDN does have security aspects of itself. Again, coming to the intrusion detection course that you have. You can't really use intrusion detection techniques that we use in traditional, conventional networks in SDNs. Not necessarily. It would be quite complicated to explain to you now why, but after some lectures on intrusion detection, we can come back to that. But it's interesting. It's an interesting research subject as well. Okay. Independently evaluated and tested products is another principle. What it means is this. When you put together a large-scale system, it's good practice to have all of its elements individually evaluated and tested, obviously, with regards to security. Doesn't that sound obvious? Yeah, of course we do that. Yes. How do we do that, by the way? How do we evaluate security-related products? Have you had any course on this? Does the term common criteria ring a bell? It does. ISO 15408. Okay. And of course, then you're familiar with the EALs, EALs, right? Evaluation levels. Okay. So you know how to evaluate individual products. Question. Suppose that I have one element of a bigger system, which is evaluated at EAL X, it doesn't matter what it is. And then you put it together with another element of the system, which is evaluated at EAL Y. What is the EAL of the overall system? Evaluation level, it's a security level, okay? So I have two products, two devices. One is of security level X, the other one is of security level Y. And I put them together to form a system. What's the security level of the outcome? Okay, one answer is the lowest one. Anything else? Any other offers? I would say that it cannot be greater than the lowest one. But it can be lower than the lowest one. And that's where the problem lies, right? In fact, we don't have a way of assuring, because this is assurance that we're talking about, right? Of assuring a system that is comprised of assured elements and knowing what kind of assurance level we can assign to it. This is still open. It is one of the proposals that have been submitted by us, some colleagues, for research. We expect the results. So these are possibly things that you might want to consider working on if you're willing to spend your lives doing research in academia or in research other than industry, of course. Well, industry does research as well, but anyway. Okay. IT system configuration. Okay, this is, you should have a configuration there in place. And then there are non-technical things like staff training and security baselines are profiles that, minimum profiles that should be defined for the network, for any network that is within the scope of the strategy. And then aggregation, of course, is again the problem of putting all these things together and seeing what the outcome is at the overall level. And then there is a need within the strategy for global cooperation on technical measures, so the strategy should address the issue of how do we cooperate. Now, this is again important. Suppose that you have implemented very efficient and very effective technical security measures at the national level. Will that secure the nation from cyber attacks? We know not, and that's why we've talked about the need for resilience and so on. But what I'm alluding to is a nation alone able to secure itself without cooperating with other nations in cyberspace? And the answer, I think, is obviously no. Even at the technical level, not only at the strategic or at the policy level, but also at the technical level. A simple example. You detect an attack against Norwegian critical infrastructure, and it comes from the east. don't you have to cooperate with everyone else on the way from the East to the West? So technically cooperate so as to be able to resolve the attack, attribute it, and of course respond to it, obviously yes. And if the technical measures are not compatible with each other, even before this happens, then obviously this would be an extra difficulty that you would have to face. Priority three is organizational structures, and under this priority come governmental organizational structures, the CIRT, cybersecurity partnerships that will need to be built up, and this is primarily public-private partnerships, and then the national cybercrime units. Under the governmental organizational structures, all this falls under the head of government accountability, so there is some body within the government that has the general accountability for all this. In the case of Norway, for example, this is the Ministry of Justice. Okay. Overall responsibility for cybersecurity. Then you have the National Cybersecurity Coordinator and the National Cybersecurity Focal Point. And under this cybersecurity focal point, this is what the focal point should do. It is the relevant driver. It directs and coordinates cybersecurity in the country. It does provide strategic and tactical advice, coordinates incident response, provides training, and so on, and also issues standards and implementation guides. If you go to the CIRT, the protection principles here are those that we have already discussed, prevent, detect, and react, or respond. It's the same thing. But there is another one, which is called deter. The meaning is, well, if we can somehow deter attackers from attacking us, then that would save us much trouble into preventing, detecting, or reacting to attacks. So ITU complements the three principles that we have already discussed by this, which is called deterrence practically. In other settings, this is included into prevention. And then when it comes to public-private partnerships, there has to be a clear value proposition, so the strategy should be able to answer the question that the private sector would ask. What is there in it for me? Simple as that. And it has to be clear what it is. And it has to be fair. It should delineate roles and responsibilities clearly, and it should be built on trust. It's not easy to build public-private partnerships. I think that the leader in Europe has been Germany. They have been working on building public-private partnerships for cybersecurity for decades before they managed to do that, and they were the first one to do it. Interestingly enough, CCIS is a public-private partnership. So this is a very good step, actually, that Norway has done. Of course, it's not an operational public-private partnership in terms of security. It is focused on research and education, but still, it is a public-private partnership. And you won't find many in the world like that. So be proud. Then priority four in any good or model strategy is capacity building. And under capacity building goes cybersecurity skills and training. Judicial capacity, which I briefly commented upon earlier. A national culture of cybersecurity and cybersecurity innovation, alias cybersecurity research and innovation. And then priority five is about international cooperation and how the nation contributes to cooperative international efforts. Now, these are typical cybersecurity skills that a model strategy should include. I'll give you 1 minute to go through it. And tell me what you think is out of place. That's question one, if there is something out of place or which is not readily forthcoming. And number two, look at the last column and tell me which of these skills you believe that you will have after you finish your education here and which you will not have. 2 minutes. Well, if you're done before that, I'll be happy. Or, of course, if there is something that you don't know what it is. It's digestion time, that's why I have to keep you engaged, that's why I did that. Okay? More or less? Anything out of place? Anything that you don't understand? Come on. Okay. Do you believe that you will have the skills of the last column upon graduation? Yes or no? It's a big claim. Is it a yes? Is it a big yes or is it a big no? It's a big maybe, right? Okay. Which ones you think you will not feel very comfortable with? Yes. Okay. Any more? Online. First one and last one. So related to management, right? Yeah. Do you know what data custodianship was another one? Do you know what this is? Yes, it's related to forensics, correct. So you did, well, apparently you haven't had any forensic courses, right?
Just the introduction.
Just the introduction, okay. Yeah, that would not give you, of course, the competencies required to run it, but at least you're familiar with it, right? Okay. Well, that's a good scoring. Yeah, not bad. I'm not surprised. It's good to confirm that this is the case. Okay, so coming back to our original picture, now this is going to be very short. The means, which means the resources, okay, we need. They just follow from ways. If you look at what we need to do, the ways, then you identify the resources immediately. You don't have to go into that again. And finally, the last step here was the assurance and monitoring. And this is the PDCA cycle. As every self-improving process, it should follow the PDCA. Okay. So we don't need to go into detail into that since you're familiar with it. Okay, now, how many of you have read the Norwegian Cybersecurity National? Ah, come on. You should be ashamed. I haven't read the Greek Cybersecurity Strategy for one simple reason. There is none. But I have read the Norwegian Information Cybersecurity Strategy. Okay, well, shame on you. You should do that. Anyway, I'll give you an overview here, a very quick one. Objectives. And you can go into the rest. We will, I mean, we still have about 10 minutes or so. So we'll go through whatever we can, and then you can go into the details. So the objectives here, the primary objective is to set the direction and priorities that will form the basis for the government's information security efforts in the coming years. By the way, this is from 2012, but it's in the process of being reviewed now. And the strategy also defines the target audience: government, ministries, leaders of counties, municipalities, and businesses, and finally, of course, everyone. The strategy identifies security challenges and trends, and this is interesting, the list of security challenges and trends that are identified. If you try to map this into the model of ITU, this is the strategic context, right? And the threats and challenges part of it that should follow the strategic context. So apparently, Norway has done kind of a risk assessment and has come up with these particular challenges and threats that we need to address. This do not necessarily are not necessarily the same in another nation. Okay, so internet and mobile devices. Downtime is increasingly critical in Norway. New service platforms and lack of clarity of these service platforms. Increased use of offshoring. This is very particular to the Norwegian case, of course. You wouldn't expect that in, let's say, the Czech Republic or Switzerland. A market for crime. This is universal. Espionage and sabotage. This is considered to be a growing threat. Major requirements for awareness and competence arise as a need. So this is why this is a challenge, that it is found, this is a finding that because of all that, we do have major requirements for awareness and competence. Increased complexity on information security. Disloyal employees. I haven't gone into detail into that, but, well, of course, the insider threat is universal. It's not particular to Norway. But being identified as one of the challenges in the national cybersecurity strategy means that there must have been incidents of insiders attacking cyberspace, Norwegian cyberspace. And this is probably why it appears. But as I said, I have not really researched that, why it appears there. Privacy and identity abuse, of course. Then this is a challenge for international attention. And the information security, well, the English translation of the report, which of course I've been using, says weaknesses. In fact, it is vulnerabilities, I think, that should be used. And there is a vulnerabilities report that is coming out every now and then in Norway, identifying the vulnerabilities in the country, including critical infrastructures, of course, in cyberspace, in a more general setting. Okay. Now then, the strategy defines the roles and responsibilities of ministries. First of all, it defines company responsibility, so the private sector is there, and then responsibilities of sectoral ministries. So several ministries, sectoral ministries, have responsibility for information security, and these responsibilities are to identify critical infrastructures, to assess, determine, and implement preventive measures, to plan emergency measures, to plan and, when necessary, initiate crisis management, and then to supervise and monitor efforts in their subordinate departments. And then there are ministries with special responsibility for ICT security, and these are the Ministry of Justice and Public Security, which has the overall coordination of information security, civilian security, in a way. This is also typical. Many nations distinguish between civilian security and military security. And these are two very different branches of the cybersecurity strategies of many networks. So we look at these quite separately. There is interaction, of course, and there should be, but it's typical, simply because the security requirements in the military sector are quite different than those in the civilian sector. Not in terms of difficulty in attaining them, but because the means that the military have in their disposal for achieving the same ends are much more different than the ones that the civilian sector has. So this is the case here. Then the Ministry of Government Administration, Reform and Shared Affairs is responsible for the government's own ICT security. You have the Ministry of Defense, military sector, responsibility for security in the military sector. And the Ministry of Transport and Communications that is responsible for the security of the telecom sector in Norway, and assisted by the Post and Telecommunications Authority. That's Netcom, isn't it? The regulator? No, maybe not. Okay. Now, the overarching goals and strategic priorities. The goal first, better coordination and common situational understanding. Robust and secure infrastructure for all. Good ability to handle adverse events. High level of competence and security awareness. And then strategic priorities to ensure a more comprehensive and systematic approach to security, to improve the infrastructure, to ensure common approach in public administration, to safeguard the society's ability to prevent, detect, alert, and handle incidents, and also to investigate cybercrime. Continuous efforts to raise awareness and competence. High quality national research and development in the field of information security. This is not something that you find in typical cybersecurity strategies. So it's good that it's there in the Norwegian national cybersecurity strategy. So academia and research are promoted in cybersecurity. After all, you know that Norway is the most digitalized country in the world, right? Do you think it's the most secure country in the world? I see negative nods here, but why is that? Okay, let me provoke you. Why not? How would you measure that? Come again?
Too many global people.
Well, that's intuition. But okay, let's take this as a scenario. Suppose that somebody asked you to measure the security level of countries across the world. How would you do it? How would you go about that? Okay, let me downsize it a bit. Suppose that you want to evaluate the level of security in an organization, in a business. Would you count the number of incidents? Yes, it is one measure. Is it the only one? You mean penetration testing? Do you mean whether the organization uses penetration testing? Oh, you can do penetration testing too. That's what you mean. So that you undertake penetration testing so that you see the security level. Okay? Test the people. What do you mean? Have them write exams?
Yeah.
Something like that? Sure. Well, all these are measures. There are many more. We have ways of measuring the level of security in enterprises, in businesses, and they include all these. Remember that you have to look at processes, people, and technology, and actually the examples that you gave. One is on technology, penetration testing. I would take the number of incidents under the processes, more or less, but just a small note on this. It's not the number of incidents that determines the quality of your security setting in an organization. I would say that a more accurate metric is the number of reported incidents and the number of incidents handled correctly. Because the number of incidents is actually something which is external. So, you know, the whole world might be attacking you. You're not responsible for that. And then the third one was people, of course. So the examples that you gave span the three aspects that we should, but there are many more. Now, try to look at this at the national level and find a way, methodology, to measure the security of nations. Don't try. One of the first things that I was taught when I was a student, electrical engineering at that time, when dinosaurs were working around, of course, still, was, well, if you're given a problem, the good engineer, the first thing that they do is what? You don't try to solve it. You look and try to find out whether someone else has solved it already. So, and you will find in many, many times that someone else has solved it. In this particular case, there is a methodology for measuring the quality of security in nations. In fact, I think it is also by ETU. If you Google it, you will find it. Norway is number 2 in the world. It is number 1 in the region. By region, meaning Europe. I think the title of the report is Cybersecurity Wellness, or something like that. Don't take the results for granted, of course. This is one way of doing it. But it would be interesting to look at the methodology and see how this can be done. Basically, one basic element, fundamental element of this, of course, is looking at the cybersecurity, the national cybersecurity strategy. Okay, so then the implementation and action plan should define the responsibility for implementation, economic and administrative implications of the implementation, and then the strategy lists those selected national contexts for information security, which are not a few. Are you aware of all those? Is there any one of those that you have never come across?
Maybe, yes.
This? I know that. Maybe. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but the rest is more or less known. Okay. I should look into that. Maybe you know it under the Norwegian program. Okay, and the strategy, as I said, is under revision. And there is a white paper out. This is where it is. It points out that we now have hybrid threats, not only cyber threats. Remember, the original strategy was back in 2012. Hybrid threats were not that common at that time. And because this is identified as one of the problems, or as a challenge, the government will seek to strengthen the cooperation and to appoint a committee to consider the legal regulation of ICT security and to establish a national framework for digital incident response. And by also establishing a national strategy for competencies, the government will facilitate long-term development of such competencies. And it then lists the areas that are considered to be particularly important, and these of course have technological or technology implications. So it's preventive, attack detection and response, then competencies, and what is of interest to us here, critical ICT infrastructure. Okay. Yeah, we just ran out of time, I think. So this is the EU cybersecurity strategy. I think we'll cover that in the next session. Okay? Any questions, comments, or whatever before I leave you in peace for today? No? Okay, so thank you very much. See you next week.